Welcome to another classic episode of the Rebasketco podcast. That's right, we're not talking about music today. It's no longer the Reclassico podcast, it's the Rebasketco podcast, the Rebracketco, whatever you want to do. And we're doing this, we're recording this on Selection Sunday. So the NCAA tournament bracket just came out. Games start on Thursday. And because it's Selection Sunday, we have to make all of our selections on Sunday, of course, right? Obviously not, but we're doing it anyway so that we can get this out early in the week. This, what I'm going to be talking about today is, A, my gut reaction of the bracket. I'm going to give you some quick picks to where they go. We'll see. I mean, the tournament can be a little bit of a crapshoot. But more importantly, I'm going to be talking about the philosophy of building a bracket. And I've created myself a little manifesto based on past tournaments, what's worked for me, what hasn't worked for me. And the idea is these principles maybe will – these are things that I've noticed as trends over the past couple of years. And when I'm trying to pick a bracket against another pool of humans – these are the guiding principles that I try to use. And the goal behind this episode is, if you haven't done a lot of research, if maybe like this podcast is part of your prep, I know I've crammed a lot of my research into the past week or so. The idea is like, even if you don't, what are quick ways to determine like what teams you might want to pick? And we'll go a little bit more into depth. So the agenda for this episode is, I'm going to talk about, we did a bracket special last year. I'm going to say how that went and maybe lessons learned from last year's bracket. I'm then going to give you my six rules, my 2023 NCAA tournament bracket manifesto. And then I'm going to go through the bracket, give some picks, give my thoughts, and then we can close it out. But before that, I need to do a quick detour just for posterity's sake. I never released my 2023 Albums of the Year podcast. I recorded it. I just didn't have the time to edit it, or couldn't get myself to edit it. So for the sanctity of the record, and this is just to submit to the Library of Congress, my Album of the Year picks for 2023. Number 8, I had Blue Rev by Always. Number 7, I had Fawn by Foxtails. Number 6, I had Paraglow by the duo Asian Glow and Paranul. They're a South Korean band, South Korean artist. Number 5, I had Expert in a Dying Field by The Best. Number 4, I had Drill Music in Zion by Lupe Fiasco. Number 3, I had Ants From Up Here by Black Country New Road. Number 2, I had I Love You, Jennifer B. by the British duo Jockstrap. And number 1, my Album of the Year, more like an EP of the year. It's by Weather Day and Asian Glow, and the title is Weather Glow. So we'll get back to basketball in a second, but if you have any thoughts or 3-month-old Album of the Year list, let me know, and happy to talk about that. But we're talking about the bracket. We're talking about the 60. Well, we'll only be talking about 64 teams. No one cares about the play-in. The NCAA tournament that just came out, obviously no bracket picker is fallible or is infallible. And so I want to tell you how my bracket did last year. Last year, I thought I had a pretty good bracket. I had some wins. One win was that I told everyone, like, everyone is sleeping on Duke. At the time, they were 17-1 to win the title. And they made it to the Final Four, and if Caleb Love didn't play like a good basketball player for once, they could have very much won it. So I consider that a win. They weren't expected to make the Final Four, and they did. My biggest win of the bracket was, I called it that Miami would beat 10-seed Miami would beat 2-seed Auburn with Jabari Smith. Saw that coming a good bit away. I did not see Miami going to the Elite Eight, but they did. And we'll be talking about Miami quite a bit in this year's bracket. The big losses that we had in last year's bracket, I was recording this with my podcast partner, Mario. we believed a little too much in University of Longwood, obviously just because they're a local school, obviously. We also both picked Wisconsin to go to the Final Four, and I don't think we really understood. We picked them because they had this stellar sophomore, Johnny Davis, who was just carrying them all throughout. I thought he was a Kemba Walker candidate, per se. And we picked him to go to the Final Four. I think Mario had him to win it all. We did not understand the extent of his injury, and they lost in round two. So that was an L. And an even bigger L is that I should have seen coming is the absolute cakewalk that Kansas had to the national title game. I believe the best seed they played was number four, Providence. They played an eighth seed, UNC, in the title. And, of course, the aforementioned Caleb Love, who was having an absolute heater, reverted to his 3 of 15 ways. If you're a Carolina fan, you're very familiar with that. Sorry, I didn't mean to throw so much shade at Carolina. I think I only have one more Carolina joke later in the podcast. So that was my performance last year. I think I did all right. It was looking good till the end, and I just didn't have Kansas in the Final Four, which was a pretty fatal mistake. And with that, let us get into our 2023 bracket manifesto. A little bit of background. This heavily borrows from the Bill Simmons podcast playoff bracket manifesto. I'm just trying to have fun with it. Let's get into it. Another disclaimer I will say is that I'm not going to say that I'm an expert picker or a gambling sharp. I'm going to say that I've filled out brackets before, and these are kind of the rules that I go by. So you can take it or leave it. If you want to fade me, I did bet on the Philadelphia Eagles to win the Super Bowl, and that went horribly wrong in the second half. So maybe you should just listen to the first half and fade the second half. Who knows? But self-deprecation aside, let's get into this. And so I have six rules. Actually, I have seven rules. My apologies. First rule is going to be a little bit long, and then the other ones are going to be a bit quicker. And my number one rule, aka my number one philosophy point, is that you are picking against expectation. You are not picking against perfection. That's a little bit hard to explain, but I think a good way to think of it is you are picking against other humans, and you are trying to pick against what their expectations are going to be. And to maybe rephrase that a little bit, I want to think of each team in the 64 seed tournament as a stock. So you'll have your one seeds, which have very high stocks. They get one seeds because they are really good. And get that preferred seeding because they did really well in the regular season and are probably going to do pretty well in the tournament. So those one seeds are really kind of blue chip stocks from usually blue chip programs that probably most humans are going to go by that and believe that those particular teams are going to go pretty far in the tournament. No reason to believe that they might get upset by a 16 seed. Maybe they might get upset by an 8 seed or perhaps a 4 seed. That's when stuff gets real. But if anyone's going to make it through, those teams, historically, the best seeded teams are probably the best bet to make it to the Final Four. And of course, expectations are not always reality. A one seed can lose in the first round. It's happened once before. It's only happened once before. Plenty of one seeds have lost in the second round. Plenty of one seeds have lost in the third round. But odds are that most people that you are going against in your bracket pool are going to pick the one seeds to go relatively further than the two seeds and the three seeds and the four seeds. And so understanding a lot of this game is, and the goal of rule number one is that you want to kind of anchor and try to gauge where each team is expected to go. And if you believe in that team, you might pick them to go one or two rounds further. If you don't believe in that team, you might pick them to go one or two rounds shorter. And the reason I try to frame it this way is because you want to think of upside risk and downside risk when you're picking teams. So let's say I think the one seed team Purdue sucks and everyone thinks they're going to go to the Final Four, but I think they might lose in the first round. Well, them losing in the first round is a very bold premise. And if I'm wrong, and let's say they just go to their expected value of Final Four, then I'm missing out on the first round, the second round, the third round. That's a lot of downside risk. And I'm losing a lot of points because I picked so far below their expectations that it was almost off the map. And I say all this, and while I don't think it's fun to pick chalk, aka when you pick all the top-seeded teams to do well in the tournament and you pick zero upsets, you have to pick some upsets, right? And I'll explain a couple of scenarios where you can pick those, where it might be a good idea to pick some of those upsets. What I'm just saying is you don't want to pick so many upsets that your bracket is screwed because you got a little too bold with a certain thing. Think of, again, going back to the stocks analogy, you're building a portfolio in this bracket and you have to manage risk both sides. And so even if you feel super strongly about a team, you don't want to stray too far off you don't want to stray way too far off expectations that it's not realistic because you're just losing a little bit of bang for your buck. And just to give one more example, let's say you're a huge fan of the six-seeded Kentucky Wildcats and you think they're grossly underseeded and you think they're going to win the national title. Well, if that six seed wins the national title, that's so far away from expectation. If it actually pans out, you've probably won your bracket pool. So you can pick a wild card team to win the national title or a wild card team to make the Final Four. That's, you've probably differentiated your bracket enough. If that happens, you're probably good to win the title. And in that case, you don't really want to bog out the rest of your bracket with a bunch of unlikely upsets because your whole bracket is already contingent on that one particular team doing well. And so I hope that makes sense, but then maybe it'll make more sense as we keep going throughout the podcast. I'm going to recap that rule number one is you're picking against expectations, not perfection. Now, rule number one, you might be asking, like, all right, where do these expectations come from? And if you're trying to guess what other people in your bracket pool are trying to pick from, there's a couple different sources of expectation. Number one is going to be the seeding, right? So if you have a lot of people who haven't really been following, but they're filling out a bracket, those seedings tend to anchor a lot of expectations. But other things, let's say you don't really know who's good and who's not. There's a lot of good resources out there that will give you like the gist of who's good and who's not, where you don't have to do a whole dang research project. In fact, this is something you can look up in 2 minutes. And those key expectations are, those two sources that I want to point out are one, gambling lines. So people put their money, like a lot, gambling lines are good because sharp bettors are putting real financial incentives on behind their predictions. And those people tend to do their research beforehand. So some looking at who's favored to win the national title is a good kind of data point to keep in mind. And I'll have those gambling lines in a second. But another thing you can check out is if you go to 538.com, they have a bracket prediction model that gives each team a percentage chance to win the national title. And So I think that's worth checking out. It takes 2 minutes to Google. There's probably plenty of different models out there that are free to access on the internet, and it can save you a lot of research for the rest of your bracket. Real quick before we, some of those expectations, or sorry, it, just in case you're curious, the 538 model gives Houston, University of Houston, which is a one seed, a 25% chance to win the national title. One seed Alabama, 15% chance. Two seed Texas is an 8% chance. And then Purdue is a 5% chance behind that. And then Gonzaga and one seed Kansas, three seed Gonzaga right after that. Gambling wise, it's a little bit of a similar story. Houston is a 5-1 favorite. Alabama is an 8-1 favorite. Kansas 10-1. Purdue 12-1. UCLA 14-1. Real quick, I think I am somewhat surprised that Houston is such a heavy favorite based on the models and gambling, because my sense this year is that college basketball, there hasn't been really an alpha team. There hasn't been a super dominant favorite. It seems more wide open than it usually is. And going back to expectations, there's two more sources of expectations beyond those more analytical sources. And one is narratives. So narratives are something to watch out for, whether they're true or not. That's maybe up to you to determine. And two, it's helpful to know the biases in your own particular bracket pool. I live in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is the home of the University of Virginia. And because of that, I'm going to assume that there's going to be a small bias towards UVA to do well in the tournament, because a lot of those maybe people either rooted for UVA or went to UVA. I'm going to also assume that there's probably a Atlantic Coast Conference bias to watch out for. And what that means is that there are big consequences betting against there are bigger consequences betting against the ACC and Virginia if I'm wrong and those do well. Meanwhile, there are also bigger rewards for betting at it. So more risk, more reward. We're just going, you need to understand if that's worth going against the grain in your particular bracket pool. And it's not just your other people that have biases. It's your own personal biases as well. I'll full disclosure. I grew up a University of Texas fan, and then roughly in middle school, I moved to North Carolina and became a Duke basketball fan. The two teams I really like are Texas and Duke, and I probably have them going a little bit further than most people in my bracket pool, and we'll discuss that going forward. And I know, and that'll wrap up rule one of the bracket manifesto, which is you're picking against expectations. you're picking against expectations, and it is a long rule, but it informs all the rest of the rules going further. So the rest of the rules are going to be a lot quicker. It's important to understand perhaps where the biases are coming from and what biases to look out for. And so that leads us to rule number two, which is beware conference superiority narratives. College basketball is a very regional sport, and much of the season is dominated by conference play. And in fact, that's what happens right before the tournament. You see Duke play UNC, play UVA, play a lot of teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And in a way, these conferences become their own little echo chambers in a way. And my philosophy is that all conferences, some conferences are better than others. I'll admit that. There are some years where one conference really cleans up in the tournament. But the way certain seeding, my overall philosophy is that a lot of the conferences give and take are kind of similar in terms of quality and talent, in terms of how far they'll go in the tournament. And where this matters is that sometimes you'll have matchups where the eighth best Big Ten team is playing the third best Pac-12 team. And perhaps you've heard the narrative that the Big Ten has a bunch of great teams. The Pac-12 has two really good teams at the top and kind of sucks past that. I don't know. I mean, I'll take the third best team in major conference against the eighth best team in a major conference any day. And some sort of conference superiority bias happens every year. Last year, it was believed that at the ACC was the worst major conference, and they had two Final Four teams. The year before, everyone believed that the Pac-12 really sucked, and they had, three of the eight Elite Eight teams. So they definitely overperformed conference expectations. So there are times where certain conferences do dominate a particular tournament, but it may not be the conferences we expect to dominate. So that's something to watch out for. In terms of what are the conference superiority narratives this year, there's a lot of Big Ten teams in the tournament. A lot of them are kind of in the 7 to 10 range, and then there's Purdue, which is a one seed. But they got like 9 teams in the tournament, even though every team was like 20 and 10. Big 12 is very much viewed as the best conference in the nation. I think 7 of their 10 teams made it. As someone who grew up a Big 12 fan, I'm a little bit more – I do have a personal bias towards this conference. But I will say that the last two national champions have come from the Big 12. The worst team in the conference, Oklahoma, beat one-seeded Alabama by 20 points. So I'm probably going to pick Big 12 teams to go a little bit further this year. But you might not be so inclined to pick those teams from that conference. In terms of conferences that everyone's down on, a lot of people are down on the ACC. The best seed they got was a 4 seed. 4 seed Virginia, 5 seed Miami, 5 seed Duke. A lot of people are down on the Pac-12. A lot of them view them as having two good teams, UCLA and Arizona, and then like USC and is whatever right behind them. All I ask is when you're making your picks, just try to diversify your portfolio. You don't know which conference is actually the best per se. And that leads us to rule number 3 of the Bracket Manifesto, which is do not overreact to conference tournaments. A lot of people, myself included, don't really start watching college basketball until near the end of the season once it's almost tournament time. And so I watched a lot of conference tournaments without watching a ton of regular season outside of a number of Duke games. And it's easy to overreact when one team really makes a run. Like, let's say an unexpected team makes it to the championship game of a conference tournament. It can be there. They'll be fresh in your mind, and maybe they just had a hot shooting week, and so just be aware of that, because I don't want you to. I've felt that I've had some letdowns with that, where like a dark horse team wins, like say the Big 12 tournament or something like that. Let's not overreact. That doesn't mean they're going to win the national championship. And so, meanwhile, if a team kind of gets bounced a little bit early. Maybe that's a blessing in disguise. They get a week of rest. They get to adjust. We'll see. So two teams that fit this criteria, I think Penn State made the Big Ten conference title game. You might be inclined to pick them in the first round. I think there's going to be a lot of expectations on that. I'm going to fade those expectations. But this rule really comes in for Baylor, which got bounced really early in the Big 12 tournament. I think Baylor's really good. I think they have a lot of shooters. I don't know what happened in the Big 12 tournament, but I think they're a team I kind of trust, and I'm going to pick them to go kind of far in the tournament. Rule number 4 of the Bracket Manifesto, it's going to seem oddly specific, but it really matters, and it's a top five rule. That's why it's number four. And it's beware teams with tiny guards that know what they're doing. And a good way to think of this is that March is in the NBA, like regular season basketball is much different from playoff basketball. Playoff basketball is a lot slower, less possessions, a lot more half court offense versus running up and down the court. And March Madness is a little bit more similar, and March is run by guards. These games can get really ugly. You're in an unfamiliar environment. A lot of these games are played in football stadiums, which is really weird and can maybe mess with shooting or something like that. And because of that, it's imperative that you take care of the ball. It's imperative that you have guards that can control the game. It's imperative that you have good guards, period. But there's also like these mid-major teams that have these tiny little guards that have superpowers and just go off for 30 for no reason and bounce your favorite team from the tournament. I'm looking at you, Oral Roberts, with Max A. Smith. Oral Roberts was a 15th seed that went to the Sweet 16 2 years ago because Max A. Smith led the league and led the country in scoring and carried his team as this miniature guard. So it's not saying that you can't win in March with bigs, but I think a big reason I picked Miami to beat Auburn last year is because they had really good guards and Auburn didn't, and Miami really took care of business against them. And this rule really applies to Miami. Miami is, they have this guy, ACC Player of the Year, Isaiah Wong. They are tough shot makers. That's their whole diet. It's just a lot of really tough mid-rangers, and that really comes handy in March when everything else goes wrong and you need to get a bucket. They have the personnel to get that. So ACC teams, I'm particularly biased to because they fit this rule. Miami and NC State. NC State has Jarkel Joyner, who amongst like Power 5 schools, he leads the nation in assist to turnover percentage. They have Quavion Smith, who's going to be a first-round pick, and he's a tough shot maker, to say the least. Do they have enough around them to make a run? I don't know, but they're on my radar. I think they're a scary team, and we'll see how they do in the first round. So rule number four, beware teams with tiny guards that know what they're doing. The converse of this rule is watch out for teams that are kind of built around bigs. Rule number five is don't overreact to the team that made a million tough shots in last year's NCAA tournament. This is known as the UCLA rule. And basically, UCLA had this magical run to the Final Four 2 years ago, and they didn't quite have the shot making in the next year. And then they ran into UNC, who Caleb Love again had this crazy shooting month that really he and RJ Davis and Brady Manick, who was like college basketball Larry Bird, they had this awesome run to take Carolina to the national title game. And for whatever reason, Carolina had the magic beans last year. UCLA didn't have them last year. And thankfully, we don't have to worry about this rule particularly because Carolina didn't make the tournament. But if they were here, that would be a team I would watch out for. I think this might apply a little bit to Miami because I don't know if Miami won a lot of ugly games last year, but they're kind of a tough shot-making team, and what happens if those shots don't go in. And that brings us to rule number six, which is a very important rule, and I'm going to apologize to my grandma ahead of time for the crass language in the rule. And that is beware of the trendy Final Four pick that may kick everyone in the nuts. every year, and this happens to me, there's all the analysts are saying a particular team that they have going to the Final Four, and a lot of the smart people per se believe in it, and it's hard to identify this team. That a team can be a team like last year, that team I would say was Keegan Murray and the 5-seed Iowa Hawkeyes. They just had this awesome run to win the Big Ten title, or they won the Big Ten title out of a very unexpected tournament run. And everyone was picking them to go to the Final Four, and that's a team you want to kind of avoid. And I hate to say it, but the number one candidate for the kick in the nuts team this year is my favorite team, the Duke Blue Devils. They've won 9 straight. They just kind of really took care of business in the ACC tournament. They're really trending in the right direction, and they're a 5-seed, but Vegas has them as above average title odds to win the title. They're 31-1, as opposed to other people. Like Miami's another 5-seed. They're 48-1, and they play Oral Roberts, which has tiny guards which know what they're doing. So I think they've just been playing. They've been playing really well. They've been playing well as a team, but I'm scared. It's very ominous. I think Duke really qualifies for this rule. Another team I think might qualify is Indiana. They have a stud player, Trace Jackson Davis. A lot of the Sharps kind of believe in them to perhaps make a Final Four run, and they are a good candidate, but maybe they lose in the first round. And that leads us to rule number 7, which the final rule of the bracket manifesto, which is under no circumstances believe the Texas hype. I grew up a University of Texas fan. One of my most damaging memories as a sports fan was them making the 2003 Final Four and getting their hearts ripped out by Carmelo Anthony of Syracuse. That was rough. And then they haven't been to the Final Four since. In 2008, they went to the Elite Eight. They got their hearts ripped out by Derrick Rose of Memphis. I think 2 years ago, they lost to Stephen F. Austin. And I have so much scar tissue believing in Texas, and it's kind of coming up this year because Texas is one of the low-key favorites to win, not just make the Final Four, but like a dark horse favorite to win the national title. Going into this weekend, they were 24-1 to win the title. After winning the Big 12, they're up to 19-1 and rising. 538 gives them an 8% chance to win the national title. That's the third best odds in their model. I'm really scared. I'm really scared. It may be time to get their hopes up. They fired their coach midseason and got better. They won the Big 12 tournament despite their best player being injured. Hopefully he's back for the tournament. I'm really scared because the last 20 years since that Carmelo Anthony year have led to a lot of scar tissue that really hurt my feelings. There's a Northern Iowa like half court buzzer beater. There's so much scar tissue, and this could be the team that breaks the curse. It could. When we look at the bracket, there's also like two really big chances at heartbreak, and we'll get back into that once we get there. And that is the current state of the first ever inaugural 2023 bracket manifesto. Now let's get into the actual bracket. So probably the best way to do this is, it might be a little easier if you have the bracket in front of you, or just feel free to listen. I'm going to go region by region. I know a lot of people like to do the whole first round and then the whole second round. I think it's going to be a little easier to follow audio-wise if I just do one region at a time. Please note the first round is basically half. Oh shoot, I just said we're not doing it round by round. Please note that explaining the first round is still going to take a little bit longer because I have to kind of talk about the narratives behind each team and maybe my expectations for it. I'm hoping to get this done quickly for everyone's sake. So let's jump into it. So starting with the South region, aka the top left region of the CBS sports bracket, 116, I have Alabama. Then 8-seeded Maryland versus 9-seed West Virginia. I have 9-seed West Virginia. And the only reason is because they're actually a two, even though they're a lower seed, they're a 2-point favorite against Maryland. 5-seed San Diego State versus 12-seed College of Charleston. And give me College of Charleston, the 12-seed. My understanding is that they're the ultimate live by the three, die by the three. But in a TV show I just watched, one person said that they don't have a good non-conference schedule because everyone is scared to play them because there's high risk and low reward for beating College of Charleston. That kind of makes sense. So I have College of Charleston 12-5 upset over San Diego State. 4-seed Virginia versus 13-seed Furman. This goes to, I live in Charlottesville. This is a great opportunity to go against grain. UVA has been really trending down the past year. I personally, I don't want to crap on the home team a little too much, but I don't think they deserve a 4-seed. I thought it was kind of ridiculous after whatever. After they got kind of handled by Duke, that Duke was a 5-seed and UVA was a 4-seed. But it is what it is. It is what it is. They've been really trending down. They've been really struggling offensively. Whenever I watch them, they kind of get stuffed at the rim all the time, and they kind of struggle at the free throw line, and they kind of struggle shooting. But I don't think Furman's the team to beat them. Furman's whole shtick is shooting threes, and UVA has a lot of perimeter defenders. Reese Beekman is the ACC Defensive Player of the Year. Kihei Clark. I think those guys, I think this particular matchup plays to a lot of UVA's strengths. And while I really want to pick against them, I can't believe it. I'm picking UVA over Furman. All right, next up, 6-seed Creighton versus 11-seed NC State. I should pick Creighton. Creighton was the hipster, like, national title favorite when I was watching a show just now. They said they have the 7-1, like, stretch three guy that they're this, like, really awesome offensive team. But give me NC State. I've been riding NC State. I've been talking them up all year. They are number one in tiny. They're number one for my bracket manifesto rule of beware teams with tiny guards that know what they're doing. I heard NC State's starting power forward is hurt. So that sucks. They might be a broken team. They also did just lose to Clemson by 25 points in the ACC tournament. But just give me NC State. I'm gonna go for them. 3-seed Baylor versus 14's UC Santa Barbara. Give me 3-seed Baylor. I think they're underrated. I think everyone's off the scent because they lost so early in the Big 12 tournament. 7-seed Missouri versus 10-seed Utah State. 10-seed Utah State is a 2.5-point favorite. So whenever I have the worst-seeded team as a gambling favorite, give me 10-seed Utah State only because of that. 2-seed Arizona versus Princeton. Give me 2-seed Arizona. Sticking in the South region for round two, this is to go to the Sweet 16. 1-seed Bama versus 9-seed West Virginia. Give me Alabama. We're going to address that elephant in the room. Alabama had to dismiss a player because they had a capital murder charge. And the star freshman, Brandon Miller, who's perhaps maybe one of the best players in college basketball. I don't want to misrepresent the actual details, the exact details, but he incidentally delivered the murder weapon to the scene of the crime. It's really shady, and Alabama is just kind of pretending it didn't happen. I take no joy in picking Alabama. I don't think I will not be rooting for them. And as much as I like the state of Alabama, this whole scene is just kind of fishy. But they are also kind of like one of the best teams in the country. So give me Alabama over 9-seed West Virginia. 12-seed College of Charleston versus 4-seed UVA. Give me College of Charleston. Live by the three, die by three. I'm more scared of that San Diego State game than UVA. Again, famous last words. Congrats, UVA, on going to the Sweet 16. But I have College of Charleston, the 12-seed. That's my mini Cinderella. 3-seed Baylor versus 11-seed NC State. Give me 3-seed Baylor. This is kind of where we don't want to stray too much from expectations. Like NC State versus Creighton feels like a coin flip. I don't want to do a double coin flip. Give me Baylor in that situation. I think the downside risk for picking NC State, as much as I want to, is too great. 10-seed Utah State versus 2-seed Arizona. If I had more guts, I would pick Utah State, but give me 2-seed Arizona. All right, that leads us to the regional or Sweet 16. One Alabama versus 12 College of Charleston. Come on, Alabama. 3-seed Baylor versus 2-seed Arizona. Give me Baylor. I believe in Baylor. I think they have shooters. And that leads us to the Elite Eight. 1-seed Alabama versus 3-seed Baylor. I want to pick Baylor, and I think they have a legitimate shot. And probably, if I was a betting man, would bet on Baylor. But I'm gonna take Alabama. Alabama to the Final Four. I know that's a little chalky, but I'm scared it's gonna happen. All right, in honor of daylight savings time, we are going to go counterclockwise, and I believe it's counterclockwise. And next up is the East bracket. This is the bottom left corner of the bracket. First, we have 1-seed Purdue versus 16-seed. They have a play-in opponent. I'm gonna take 1-seed Purdue. Now I'm gonna do the Purdue talk real quick. So Purdue is anchored by this big man, Zach Edey. And what you need to know about Zach Edey is basically 7'4", and their entire offense revolves around trying to get him close to the basket, them passing it to him, and then him doing either a jump hook or dunking it. And that's kind of what their offense runs around. They have freshman guards around him, and they have a pretty mediocre team around him. For my NBA fans, this is kind of like building your team around Boban Marjanovic. But Zach Edey is really good and is probably going to win National Player of the Year. He scores about like 20 to 25 points a game. If you want to understand kind of like the two sides that are possible. So first off, I'll say like Purdue was really awesome non-conference, and they were the best team in the Big Ten by far. If you're going to pick against Purdue, it's going to be for the reasons I outlined, and it's all built around the 7'4 big guy that kind of goes against what modern basketball is. But there's kind of two ways, I think last year's tournament run is probably a nice little glimpse of maybe what's possible. So they played Texas, which is at the time a very athletic, like very decent, like major conference team. And Zach Edey basically fouled everyone out. He was really good, and he got fouled a bunch and made enough free throws, and Texas couldn't really get into the game because everyone was in foul trouble and they're just giving up free throws every single time. Fast forward to the next round, they're playing against 15-seed St. Peter's. St. Peter's, a 15-seed with tiny guards who know what they're doing, and they pull off the upset, even though they don't have the size or strength to keep up with them. So it's kind of a really tough team to gauge. I will say if you pick like Purdue to win the national title, you're probably going to be one of the like three or four people in your pool, in your 100-person pool, who do that. And so maybe that is good value, but then again, you also picked Purdue to win the national title. So that's kind of on you. But I watched them. They've actually been remarkably consistent throughout the season, and maybe they're a sleeping giant. We'll see. Next up is 8-seed Memphis versus 9-seed FAU, Florida Atlantic University. Everyone and their grandma is going to pick Memphis, even though they're only a 2.5-point favorite, because Memphis just won Conference USA. They beat Houston just now. They're this big athletic team that's been trending well. I have Memphis as well. Next up is 5-seed Duke versus 12-seed Oral Roberts, a.k.a. the Kick in the Nuts Invitational. I'm really scared as a Duke fan for Oral Roberts. I think Duke is a very good team with good-ish guards, and Tyrese Proctor and Jeremy Roach. They're not going to stop him, but maybe they can make him work for it. I'm going to pick Duke, but I'm scared of Max Asmus, the tiny guard at Oral Roberts. Number four, Tennessee versus 13-seed Louisiana. Tennessee is coached by Rick Barnes. Their starting point guard is out for the season. But they're 10.5-point favorites, and so while I wanted to pick the upset, I will go with Tennessee. 6-seed Kentucky versus 11-seed Providence. I'm going to take Providence. I think the book is out on Kentucky big man Oscar Tshiebwe, kind of their best player. He gets kind of attacked mercilessly in the pick and roll. Well, I regret this. I looked at Providence's most recent games in the Big East, and there are a lot of losses. So maybe this isn't the time to pick Kentucky to go down, but I'm going with Providence. 3-seed Kansas State versus 14-seed Montana State. I know nothing about Montana State. Look at me, Kansas State, number 3. All right, 7-seed Michigan State versus 10-seed USC. I am going to be going against the rule, which is don't believe in conference narratives. Like, based on that rule, I should probably pick USC. Michigan State's a 1.5-point favorite. I believe in Tom Izzo. I think they're a decent team, so give me 7-seed Michigan State. 2-seed Marquette versus 15-seed Vermont. Give me Marquette, 2-seed. Second round, we have Purdue. 1-seed Purdue versus 8-seed Memphis. A lot of people are going to pick Memphis, and I don't blame them. I think this is a game Zach Edey fouls everyone out. So I will pick Purdue, although I think this is kind of a coin flip. 5-seed Duke versus 4-seed Tennessee. I mean, Duke, you might have Oral Roberts here. I'm going to pick Duke. Tennessee has been good for really good stretches, but missing their point guard, Duke's been kind of rolling. I'm going to be biased and pick my team Duke. 3-seed K-State versus 11-seed Providence. I don't really believe in Providence, but I picked them. Give me 3-seed Kansas State and my Big 12 bias. 2-seed Marquette versus 7-seed Michigan State. For whatever reason, I had Marquette notifications on my phone. And for the past month, it's just been like, oh, Marquette won. Marquette won. Marquette won. Oh, Marquette won the Big East tournament. Apparently they're shooting well. Apparently they're a complete team, and maybe they know what they're doing. It scares me going against Tom Izzo. Tom Izzo, the coach of Michigan State, who's made a ton of Final Four runs from the seventh spot. Give me Marquette, although I think that game's a little closer than you think. Next up, 1-seed Purdue versus 5-seed Duke. I don't know, man. I could see Zach Edey. Purdue beat Duke kind of handily earlier in the season, so know that before you pick Duke. But I'm picking Duke. 5-seed Duke. I think I'm going to short Purdue as successful as they've been. 2-seed Marquette versus 3-seed Kansas State. Give me 2-seed Marquette. I don't know. 2-seed Marquette versus 5-seed Duke. I want to say Duke. This hypothetical game would be, I believe, in Madison Square Garden. There's going to be a bunch of Duke fans, but give me Marquette. So far I have Alabama And 1 seed Alabama, 2 seed Marquette in the Final Four. Again, not really risky, but let's move again counterclockwise to the West region. That is in the bottom right corner of the bracket. Starting off with 1 seed Kansas versus 16 seed Howard. Good time to talk about Kansas. I hate Kansas. Kansas has been the bane of Texas, and they've been kind of like the boogeyman my whole life. I am still mad that they got an absolute cakewalk to the national championship last year. And they're really good. And they have Jalen Wilson, who's perhaps like the best wing in the country. They have a good backcourt. They have a good, I assume they have a good front court. Part of their backcourt, they also have this guy, Grady Dick. So that's a fun name. So if you want to root for him, but he might go in the lottery. So they can light it up. And a key stat, if you care about this, is there's quad one. So quad one, the top quadrant of college basketball record wise, or not in terms of like the committee's eyes. Kansas had a NCAA record 17 quad one wins or something crazy like that. So they won in what many consider the best conference in college basketball consistently. And they're kind of a juggernaut, even though I watched them against Texas just now, and they just kind of quit in the last 5 minutes of the game when they were down 10 and lost by 20 to a Texas team without their best player. So I think there are warning signs, but I don't know. They have a good backcourt, and so we'll see what happens with Kansas. 8 seed Arkansas versus 9 seed Illinois. I have no clue. I'm going with the spread, which is Arkansas -2.5. So 8 seed Arkansas. 5 seed St. Mary's versus 12 seed VCU. This is going to be a very popular upset pick because St. Mary's likes to play really slow, and VCU is pressing a lot. That's kind of their whole shtick. Mike Rhodes, former Rice University coach that used Rice University as a pogo stick to go back to VCU. I still kind of hate that, but I will be picking VCU, the local Richmond team. Give me 12 seed VCU over 5 seed St. Mary's. 4, UConn versus 13 seed Iona. I would be tempted to pick Iona because Iona is coached by Rick Pitino, a legendary Louisville coach who is using Iona to kind of rehab as he falls from grace. He did accept a new job, or there's a lot of rumblings that he's looking at other jobs right now. I think that can be a little distracting, but I also think UConn is good. I have not watched a UConn game. I don't know anyone who's watched a UConn game. Do you know anyone who's watched a UConn game? I don't know, but I was watching this show, this bracket show beforehand, and they were really hyping them up. They said they have like a really good wing defender. And they were highly ranked at the beginning of the season, so we'll see if they can keep it up. Give me UConn. 6 seed TCU versus either Arizona State or Nevada. I really like TCU. And solely because I saw a stat on Twitter saying TCU leads the country in transition efficiency. So their whole shtick is like, if you turn it over, we're getting it and going. And I think that's a little, unless you're like airtight as guards, that is kind of a lot to do. So, spoiler alert, I really like TCU. I think they can do some damage in this tournament. They might lose in the first round. That's part of being a 6 seed, but give me 6 seed TCU. 3 seed Gonzaga versus 14 seed Grand Canyon. Gonzaga, based on their pedigree, based on them becoming somewhat of a blue blood, based on them just kind of kicking ass in the West Coast Conference the last month or so. What I've heard is that they're an awesome offensive team that has really trended upwards defensively in the past month or so. And they are a sleeper national title pick. I think if we were going at, like, they have the 6th best odds despite being a 3 seed at 15-1 to win the title. Even 538 gives them the best odds amongst 3 seeds at 4%. So they are a trendy team and probably like almost slightly underseeded. So they're going to be trendy. A lot of people are going to have them in the Final Four. We'll see. So we'll talk a little bit more about them next round. 7 seed Northwestern versus 10 seed Boise State. Northwestern is an underdog, a 1.5 point underdog, because I don't know, maybe they're not as good. Maybe not. I've watched zero Northwestern. I heard they're a good defensive team. That's it. Give me 10 seed Boise State. Whenever I see a lower seed with better gambling odds, I'm going to pick them. 2 seed UCLA versus UNC Asheville. 2 seed UCLA. My baby boy, Tiger Campbell. I love that guy. Going to the second round, we have 1 Kansas versus 8 Arkansas. That is a very, I think that's a tough matchup. I think Kansas could lose it. I think any round from here on out, Kansas can lose. But give me Kansas to make it to the Sweet 16. 12 seed VCU versus 4 seed UConn. I'm scared, but I'm going to take UConn because the betting guy was hyping him up. And I think St. Mary's is actually kind of decent. So I'm not sure VCU will even be here. 6 seed TCU versus 3 seed Gonzaga. Give me TCU. I know they're going to be a dog in that game, but I'm not sure. Like, this kind of happens every year that, like, Gonzaga plays really well, but then, like, Drew Timmy gets attacked over and over again. Their guards kind of struggle with kind of big conference athleticism. Gonzaga's probably going to win, but give me TCU. I'm excited for them. 2 seed UCLA versus 10 seed Boise State. I think UCLA could lose. I think UCLA, either UCLA or Houston, I think has potential to be the team that you pick to win the national championship and you kind of hate your life starting in round 2 or round 3. I may be wrong. Maybe that team is Bama. Maybe that team is Kansas. Maybe that team is Purdue. Who knows? But give me 2 seed UCLA over Boise State. Moving on to the Sweet 16, 1 seeded Kansas versus 4 seed UConn. I thought really long and hard about picking UConn here. I think the rest of my bracket was kind of a little too upsetty, and so I played it safe and went for Kansas here, but I don't know. So Kansas is kind of scary. 2 seed UCLA versus 6 seed TCU. I love TCU. I want to pick TCU. I think winning a round 1 game and then beating Gonzaga and then beating UCLA is kind of a lot to ask for. So give me 2 seed UCLA. Elite 8, 1 seed Kansas versus 2 seed UCLA. I want to pick UCLA, but I'm scarred. And while Kansas does kind of lose in the lead 8, they ruined my bracket last year. Kansas ruined my bracket because I did not see the cakewalk coming. While I think it'll be less of a cakewalk this time, I'm just emotionally hedging. Give me 1 seed Kansas into the Final Four. Which leads us to the 4th and final region, the top right corner, the Midwest region. I see we're going a little bit over an hour, but you know, this might be hope. We're almost done. So 1 seed Houston is 16 seed Northern Kentucky. Houston, overwhelming favorite. I'm just going to say it right now. I do not get the Houston hype. I get that they're a really good team. I get that they're experienced. I get they've been to the Elite Eight and Final Four recently. I get that they have some NBA prospects on the team. That they're a good defensive team, and I get that they were pretty decent in non-conference. If you say they're the favorite, I totally believe you. If you say they're a 5-1 favorite, or as 538 would put it, a 25% chance to win the title, like almost twice as much as Alabama, 3 times as Texas, 5 times as Purdue, 5 times as Kansas, I don't believe you. I don't believe you. They're top scorer, I believe he's their top scorer, Marcus Sasser, tweaked his ankle. It looks like he's going to be a go for the tournament. But Yeah. I don't get why they're an overwhelming favorite. I don't think they've been cleaning house, even though they have a really good record this year. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they're going to cut down the nets and win the tournament. So we'll see. This could be my Kansas this year that I should respect, but I might not. 8-seed Iowa versus 9-seed Auburn. The line is basically a pick 'em. I have no clue. I know nothing about Iowa. I do know about Auburn. They do have this guard, Katie Johnson, and my guess is it's just going to be a close game. And Katie Johnson, what I've heard, is a little bit of – he's talented, but also kind of like a little bit of a ball hog. He gets criticized a lot for not passing to Jabari Smith enough when Jabari Smith Jr. was one of the best players last year. I saw this SEC tournament game where it got to crunch time and he played magnificently the whole game, and then he was like, I got this – in the end, and kind of like fumbled it away. I don't know, but so I'll take Iowa. I have no read on that game, but beyond that, 5-seed Miami versus 12-seed Drake. What's scary? I think Miami is the best team in the ACC. I think Miami. I highly respect them. Their one big guy got hurt against Duke last week, and it did not look good. I don't think nor Chad Omier, I believe is his name. They don't have anyone over 6'7 on the roster, which is really scary. Jay Billis kind of like looked me in the eyes during the bracket show and was like, Miami really needs to look out for Drake. Jay Billis was looking directly at me because I am like beyond like actual Miami fans. I'm higher on Miami than like everyone. And them losing to Drizzy would be kind of tough for my bracket podcast, for my bracket portfolio. You should probably pick Drake, but I will be picking Miami. They have the guards. I love Isaiah Wong. I think they're underseeded as a 5-seed, and I think they're legit. 4-seed Indiana versus 13-seed Kent State. Indiana only a 4.5-point favorite. Give me Kent State at... This is like a real upset pick because Indiana could very well go to the Final Four. I know that's against my expectation philosophy, but give me Kent State. 6-seed Iowa State versus winner of Pittsburgh and Mississippi State. I was doing laundry at a laundromat, and Iowa State was on, and they were doing pretty decent against Kansas. So give me Iowa State. 3-seed Xavier versus 14-seed Kennesaw State. I could see SportsCenter saying like Kennesaw State, but I know nothing about either of these teams. Give me 3-seed Xavier, 11.5-point favorite. 7-seed Texas A&M versus 10-seed Penn State. Penn State is part of the manifesto of don't overreact to the conference tournaments. Give me Texas A&M University. Also in the bracket show, someone said like Texas A&M was vastly underseeded. I'm scared, and I also believe in cosmic narratives, as you'll see in the next round, because they could play Texas. We could have Texas A&M in the second round, and I'm scared as hell. 2-seed Texas versus 15-seed Colgate. Give me Texas. 2-seed. All right, second round. 1-seed Houston versus 8-seed Iowa. Give me 1-seed Houston. 5-seed Miami versus 13-seed Kent State. My boys, Miami Mafia. 6-seed Iowa State versus 3-seed Xavier. I have no clue. Give me 3-seed Xavier. 7-seed Texas A&M versus 2-seed Texas. Rule number 7 of the bracket manifesto is do not believe the Texas hype. They will hurt your feelings. This is an opportunity for Texas A&M to really hurt my feelings. For Texas, after a great season, winning the Big 12 tournament, which I could only dream of as a kid, beating Kansas twice, which I could only dream of as a kid, this could be a total gut punch. And as a Duke fan, as much crap as I've been giving Carolina beat Duke in the NCAA tournament last year, I'm scared something like that could happen here. I'm going to go with Texas and wince and be scared as a fan and have a blankie while I watch this game. Partly because there is a kick. There is perhaps a more traumatic loss looming later in the bracket. Not to foreshadow too much. One seed Houston versus five seed Miami. This is irresponsible, but I have to get frisky. Give me five seed Miami to the lead eight over one seed Houston, the bracket favorite. Two seed Texas versus three seed Xavier. Come on. Give me Texas. All right, two seed Texas. All right, two seed Texas versus five seed Miami. Texas is usually what might be different. I've kind of buried the lead on Texas. What might be different about Texas as most years is they do have competent guards that they've gone through the transfer portal. Marcus Carr has had a really great season. He transferred from Minnesota. Tyrese Hunter, I think is his name, transferred from Iowa State, went to the Sweet 16 last year. He's pretty solid. They do have a lot of talent, and they also do have size, which Miami does not. Miami can score points in droves, but if you punish them inside, as Kyle Filipowski of Duke did in the ACC semifinal, you can kind of outscore them. I'm going to take Texas, partially because I've probably picked Miami to go way too far. But give me Texas. And this is scary because I have Texas going to the Final Four for the first time in 20 years. That doesn't really happen. A lot of scar tissue I'm going with. So that's really scary. So we're almost done. We are up to the Final Four, which is, we'll start with the left side because the right side is emotionally devastating. One seed Alabama versus two seed Marquette. Again, remember this Final Four is in a stadium, a football stadium where the Houston Energy Stadium, where the Houston Texans play in Houston, Texas. Again, we don't know the full, I have to put this caveat again, unfortunately, but we don't know the full details of the Alabama legal situation. They're kind of like really not fun to root for. I think they're very talented, and I think they're very talented. They can kind of play with anyone and they score a million points, and maybe Marquette can keep up. This will be in a football stadium, so it could be a low scoring, ugly game. I don't know. I'm going to take Alabama to the final, as much as I am not actually rooting for it. And that leads us to the ultimate death match to hurt my feelings. Two seeded Texas versus one seed Kansas. So much riding on the line. Such a magical season from Texas already, that if they go to like the Sweet 16 in the tournament or the Elite Eight, that would just be almost cherry on the top. I'm really scared. I'm really emotionally scarred. And who knows? Like, maybe this is like Texas UCLA or Texas UConn or Texas TCU. And heck, what if Texas beat Kansas? Texas is 2-1 against Kansas this year, and they blew them out twice the last two times. This game is in Texas. This game is in Houston, Texas, where, I don't know, maybe they'll have some fans there. I don't know. What I'm going to do is I am going to do an emotional hedge. If I was a impartial observer based on what I watched this past weekend, again, probably overreacting to a conference tournament, I would pick Texas. But because I perhaps overreacting to a conference tournament. But It would be so devastating. I'm going to pick Kansas because this is an emotional hedge. If such devastating thing were to happen, at least my bracket would be okay, whatever that means. And so that leads us to the national championship final between one seed Kansas and one seed Alabama, aka the bad ending for college basketball. And I will take Kansas in the national title. I can't pick Alabama. I just can't. So that's a bracket. To give a little bit of a summary, my final four teams are Bama, 2-seed Marquette, 2-seed Texas, 1-seed Kansas. My Cinderellas, per se, or my hot takes are TCU over Gonzaga to the Sweet 16, 12-seed College of Charleston to the Sweet 16. And dang it, I have a very chalky bracket. So I'm probably going to make some tweaks in the coming days. But my bracket ended up being pretty chalky, even though I think TCU over Gonzaga is like a legitimate upset. Miami over Houston is a legitimate upset. The goal of this podcast, while I did want to give my thoughts and takes out there, the goal is to hash it out. The goal is to talk about the philosophy of picking brackets. And you don't have to take my thoughts verbatim. You don't have to take it as gospel or truth. Definitely not gospel. Please don't. And I don't think you should copy my exact picks. There might be a lot of stuff I said that you want to fade, which I definitely encourage. My goal is I hope you had a good time listening. I hope it made you think about why we make picks that we do, and maybe some of the stuff I said you think is like good advice that you might look into taking, or some of it is kind of BS. And if you think it's BS, I'd like you to let me know so I could improve the bracket manifesto for 2024. But anyways, if you have any bracket hot takes, please let me know. And yeah, thank you. Please send this to a basketball fan you know if you think they'd really like it. Or if you found this helpful, please feel free to recommend this to a friend. And when your bracket busts in the very first round, I'll have lawyers ready. So thanks again for checking out the episode. It really means a lot. Hope you have a great rest of your day and best of luck to your bracket. And I don't have any outro of music in my audio player right now, but so do. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Take care.